Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine. It's episode number 108. I grew up near Highway 108, up in the foothills. Anyway,
that's
trivia. It's Tim Goodman, Chief TV Critic of the Hollywood Reporter. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Jason. How are you?
I'm good. I didn't introduce myself, but I'm Jason. I'm also here. And I grew up by Highway 108. So, you know, up in the foothills.
Someone just randomly tuned into episode 108 and they're like, who is this guy?
Who is this other guy?
They he just lives near a mountain.
Yeah, he grew up in Sonora. Is that possible? Are people from up there? Yes, some people are from there.
What have I stumbled upon?
I know. What did I accidentally touch on my smartphone to give me these voices now? Anyways, we are a podcast about television, and we're back after skipping Thanksgiving week, as was foretold.
Yes.
We discovered while recording the last episode that we probably weren't going to do another one. Good call. And we're back.
Yes.
So there's controversy, Tim. Did you know it?
Is there? What's going on?
Well, you are normally, now listeners to this podcast will know, you are normally a very happy-go-lucky guy, kind of a shrinking violet, don't really want to make trouble, don't want to make waves.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so you wrote this piece. Now, let me back up a second. So 2 weeks ago, we talked about how Netflix and Amazon and Starz were going to skip the winter press tour. And you said, that's fine. I'm skipping it too.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then something funny happened, which is then ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox suddenly announced they would also be skipping the winter press tour.
Well, they would be the executive session, entire network. Yeah.
Yeah. But the executives are not going to, we're not going to hold court in front of the television critics. And so you wrote a thing a couple of days ago where you said the network chiefs were opting for cowardly collusion, which is nice alliteration, by the way, just a wordsmithing note. Well, did you write that headline? Or
I did, yes.
Oh, nice. Very, because sometimes the editors write the headlines, but, you know, in skipping the TCA. So, So, we should talk about that first. Then there's been some reaction and some change since then. But we should start, I feel like, with this part of the story, which is, you know, that they pulled out of the executive sessions. And you said, basically, to summarize your well-crafted story, boo.
Yes, it was a gentle boo in their ears so that they would listen. Today, Fox is back in. Fox has decided to rejoin. That was smart.
Balls in the court of the other ones, but they so Fox's story, and I'll put these links all in the notes with this episode, but Fox's response was essentially like, "Oh, we heard from our friends at the TCA that they want to hear from us." So, okay. I mean, that was basically it. Like, oh, they said that the executive sessions were valuable to them. And so message received. We'll do it.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that's fine. If they want to word it that way, that's good. I think that's good. I'm just happy to have them back. I think that's a good idea. The others, if they were smart, they would do it. There's reasons to not do it. I mean, it's not, as I point out in the article, it's not fun. But you can also, there's some whining about like, oh, we can't control the narrative. Yeah, you can. You can control the narrative from the top. You're not supposed to control all of it. If you didn't do well, you didn't do well. But you can also frame why you didn't do well. I mean, the industry has completely changed. I think the bottom part of that article that I wrote was just that. It's like, I think that they're doing the best job that they can do. This fall, I think they did the right idea with how they programmed their stuff with familiar franchises and sort of easily digestible stuff. And it could pay off in the long term. I think they need to stick to that for sure. But if I was a network head, which I would never in a million years want to be, nor have I ever wanted to be, I would just say, look, the industry has changed so much. We're trying to fix it. We're one of five and we're doing our part, but like everybody's got to get together to sort of reimagine it. And it's still, there's no getting around that they were late to this. And they continue to be late to it, but they need to change how their business model works because it's not cost effective for them right now. They don't get the ratings back on the investment they put in. They spend millions and millions of dollars for what other people are getting the same ratings for, spending like not a quarter of it. So, and you look at that in a wider spectrum of multiple, multiple shows. There's just millions of dollars being burnt up. What's the answer? I don't know. If I knew the answer, I would change the whole industry. I would be a hero. But they have to figure it out themselves, and it's certainly not working the way it is now. Any kind of big hit is an outlier, as I note in the piece. And I wish them, networks, they definitely serve a purpose. It's not my favorite stuff. I definitely watch, you and I have talked about this many times. There are shows that I definitely watch as far as like, I don't want to think about
the comfort food.
I don't want to think about Westworld this week. It's too complicated. So I'll just do that. And I'll watch something and fold laundry and eat and all that other stuff. But they need to figure out how to better present their stuff in a more affordable way. One of many changes that need to come to the industry. But you can take the microphone at the press tour and handle that. There's all kinds of nostalgia that people will say, the press is so, they're so mean now, and there's this like, they just snark, and they just with Twitter, and but Twitter ruined everything. Wah! And, they're just like, there's a lot of that kind of feeling coming from within the industry. It's like, it's not worth our time. Let me tell you something, people. I was there back before there was Twitter. And instead of like tweeting out snarky stuff, people were reading newspapers in the back, completely ignoring others. And I was also in the room when people were a whole hell of a lot meaner than most of the people in TCA right now. So it's just, it's people forget. They want to whitewash history. They want to say, oh, you guys were so civil before. No, I came up with some of the meanest, the people that made me look like I was just like super happy and easy, rolled over.
Like I said earlier. Yeah. Super sunny disposition.
Yeah. I was a little wallflower compared to some of these other ones. So it's just a memory. People forget that those elements were there, and they were the big players too. So it's, TCA is what it is. If you opt out of it, it's at your loss. And some of these people will come back. I think that, and here's the other problem. I mean, just to put this in the what's going to happen. Those that don't come this year who have said, we just want to do it this time. We'll do it next time. Okay, so if you come back in July, what's the first question going to be? It's going to be, where were you in January? Uh-huh. Why were you hiding from us? You're missing an opportunity. You've only put a bigger spotlight on ducking. And as I point out, it was collusion, which is a little bit shocking. And in the history of the press tour, this has never happened before. No other network presidents got on the phone with the other network presidents and say, we're afraid. We don't, those meanies on Twitter, we don't want to go out there. No, they never did that. They went out there and they changed the narrative and they said what they said. And it was like Les Moonves went out there and, that was when CBS was doing nothing, man. They were doing jack. And he was just like, okay, let me tell you the truth. And that's how you get respect. And that's, you can't be part of the game if you don't participate. So I always say, never pass up a chance to tell your story. So hopefully they will.
You got to have skin in the game to play in the game.
Absolutely.
A couple follow-ups I got for you.
Okay.
One is about this idea of... that it's what's it good for, and you mentioned it, like Twitter and all of that. So our friend the mass scheduler took some shots, I think, at you, and you took some shots at him, and that's all, again, it's all part of the game. You got to be in the game, right? You it goes for you too. You write something, people can come at you, and that's fine too.
No problem.
But I was struck by it because I am sure there are people who are not particularly thoughtful, and people who are at the TCAs who maybe get off a little bit too much on snarks on Twitter, and that they're more performing themselves for Twitter than they are covering the event. But as somebody who doesn't go to these events, let me tell you, I watch the coverage of it. I watch the tweets from it. I think this is also, it's publicity for what the networks are doing and whether it's broadcast or cable or whoever. I think it is agenda setting. I think you can use it as a platform to send messages to people via the reports on Twitter and then via the reports that come out. I mean, I feel like it does have value and it does serve a purpose. And the snark, those would have been snarky columns and now they're snarky tweets. But that's almost like strikes me as being the cost of doing business to do that. And I find great – content and value and information and perspective in the coverage of these things. And that includes like the executives saying what they're doing, right? I find value in it. So I have a problem with kind of the argument that, you know, it's not worth their time, unless literally the argument is it's not worth their time because they don't actually have anything that they can say that will make them look good. So why play?
and that is, like I said, chicken shit as well. And it's just to just prep yourself better.
Check the box.
But, you know, it's like the check the box. But, you know, the thing with the mass scheduler as well, as I pointed out, this is a person who's made – he worked in the industry his entire life. This is what he did. This is how he made his money. He and I are always going to see things differently because we're seeing it from the opposite sides of the spectrum.
You have different perspectives. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And my frustration with him is that he thinks we're all idiots. and he thinks that we all think that they're all idiots, which is not true. So it's like there's a blindness to the – even in the article that I put out, you know, there's points in there that that are valid. I don't even think he would – argue that the broadcast networks are working in a model that best serves them right now. That, you know, he might not say that the industry is broken like I say, but he worked in the golden years and now it's not, and it's got to be fixed. And I think he's a little bit too, also, you know, he blames Twitter. Twitter's not the problem. Like I said, people were reading magazines in the back. You just said people wrote snarky columns. Look, some of the stuff that I wrote for the San Francisco Examiner were about like, oh my God, what kind of nonsense is this? And taking people and their spin to task. But also I learned so much from people who actually got up there like Moonvest and told the truth.
Sure.
And controlled the narrative. And were just honest. I mean, and you're always going to have, in a room like that, you're going to have people who are snarky, and you're going to have people who are not, and you're going to have people who are interested. It's only part of the room. That's always been like that. That has never changed. That argument is so weak. I can't even believe that that's tossed out there.
If I had to sum up his argument, I actually think it is that from his perspective, he never really felt like there was a lot of upside with going there. I mean, his point, you've checked the box, so I'm just going to quote verbatim what he said, because we've already checked the box today. He said, I always told my bosses there are only three responses to questions at TCA. Yeah, and your point is, and go fuck yourself. And that was it. And so from his perspective, it's like, what do we get out of this? And now with Twitter, it's like a live, you know, it's almost like a live witch trial or a live witch burning. You know, it's like we can make jokes as they scream on stage. And right. So from that perspective of like seeing no value in it, you know, why would it? It's like it's even worse now. Now the no value is breathlessly reported live. And, you know, your argument is that you get value out of it. And, you know, you can the value you take away is the value that they put in. And I if I had to summarize your piece, I think what I would say is you are coming at it from a position of confidence because you believe they do have a story to tell. If you believed that they were all like kind of empty boxes and they had no idea what they were doing and they were doing a bad job and everything was a disaster and they didn't have a story to tell, I think your story would have been very different. But you're like, you guys have, you know, you were doing the right things this fall. You know, I know it's tough, but stand up and explain what you're doing because you've got a story to tell, right? I mean, that's my interpretation of it.
Yeah. That's definitely every network has something that positive that they can talk about. You could talk about your new shows and how you're building on that. But, you know, first of all, there's a couple things I can tell you that his bosses at the time at both places he worked didn't always listen to him because they did come out and they did say things and they did have answers and they were thoughtful.
Well, I did get from that sort of like, look, listen, don't that some of it was the frustration of. It reminded me of like the West Wing or something like that, where it's almost like he's saying to them, his bosses, like, look, if you say the wrong thing, it will be really bad for us. This is a super stressful, you know, scary thing. And in the end, you know, we're not even trying to make news here. So just, you know, again, it's all this stress. So I think that definitely is where he seems to be coming from, is like, why do we put ourselves through this?
Right? Well, you know, and there's a couple of reasons why that they do. And here's the thing. First of all, let me just back up and say,
okay.
The snark part makes me laugh because I'm like, if your skin's not thick enough to take the snark, It was always there. It's just in this field. And I can tell you that, yeah, you say dumb stuff, I'm going to snark about it. But when I write my stories and when everybody else writes their columns, people who cover the industry, it's going to be in there. There's going to be more thoughtful articles. It's like you have to separate instant Twitter reaction, which is not always snark. A lot of times it's breaking news. That's constantly stuff that's going out there. You look at those feeds, and like if you're trying to corral, like it's like trying to like herd cats. Like not everybody's going to stay in line and say what you want to say. Ignore them. That's what I say. Get a thicker skin. Ignore them. And it's of the moment. The articles that come out that talk about the industry that are thoughtful, good stuff is in there. I mean, and it always has been. It's no different than it was pre-Twitter. But here's where you make the point. Networks can spend millions of dollars on an advertising budget. You can't even afford the kind of coverage you're going to get out of TCA. It's going to go everywhere. These guys, you know, the masqueraders like, oh, nothing comes of this. You're just going to snark. That is not true. We write about articles. There's feature stories. There's interviews with the cast and the crew. There's interviews with the showrunners. There is so much basically free publicity for them that they could never ever, they don't have the budgets to pay for what they get out of it. So that argument is BS and has always been BS. But you have to be able to go to this thing and say, because, you know, they will come, those that don't come will come back. And we've said this many, 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 many times. And here's the thing, NBC's got stuff that they should be talking about. They should, NBC of all people should be wanting to be there and to talk about things. But they will come back. And if you don't come back, then we will replace you. That's the bottom line. If you think it's bad now, wait until no one has ever heard of your stories or no one has ever heard of your shows. That's a bad thing. I think right now in peak TV, which I put in that column, 500 scripted series and so many people, even people who are pretty savvy about television, are like, well, I've never heard of that. What? Yeah. When is that? Or like something comes out, you're like, wait, that came out when? So people are confused. They need, even if people are snarking about a show, he put that in a tweet and it's like, at least your name got out. At least the show's name got out. Because if it didn't, and now imagine on a positive, like This Is Us, or there's tons of other shows from even shows that I didn't even like Designated Survivor. You'd think Designated Survivor would have got the bump from just being out there on its own. No one's ever talking about it. It doesn't come to press tour. There's no tweets about the session or the executive session. That's crazy time. Like that. This is that logic is so flawed. Because whether people stuck with it or not, they heard about it, and they probably heard about it through stories, not just tweets, that's crazy, but like stories that were linked to, that were written about the show, that were generated at press tour. That's how people find your shows a lot of times. And if you don't want to participate in that, then don't participate. And, you know, woe is you, because like there's a ton of other cable channels that want in and will come in and take up the time, and then we'll promote those shows.
So. What I will let me ask one question about that, which is executive sessions versus promoting series. I mean, that is one argument you could make here is we will come to the press tour with our programming, but we're not going to sit our executives down and have us explain strategy. And that's different. Like that's more of like a overarching industry business sort of thing versus, you know, hey, here's the stars, you know, here's literally the entire cast and crew of this show. Everybody ask them one question and then we're done. Does that make a difference?
Well, they can do it that way. I think they will get kickback because you know, it's like whether you're there or not, we can write whatever we want to write. And if you want a negative piece about why you're not there, that's fine. But like a lot of times the executives are the only ones that can have the answer to certain things because there's a chain of command. People won't talk. You can't go to the head of drama or comedy development. And they're going to say, oh, yeah, we're kind of like way off course now. And we need to like really fix. No, the person who runs the network will say that, but mm-hmm. not the people who report to that person because they'll get fired. And so you have this lockdown on information. I don't know. To me, it's like Trump era. It's like they're like, oh, why? The press doesn't even matter. But that's fine. If you buy into that philosophy that we are of no value, then don't come. And but if you don't bring your executives to talk about it like they have in the past, you're definitely still going to get kicked back. And then there'll be, you know, we have ways and means of saying, you know what, if you're just going to put this out here and not you know, if you're gonna put a show out here and not have anybody responsible to answer these questions, then we just won't go to that session. Mm-hmm. So there's ways to do it, but I don't think that it's gonna get to that point. I think they're all gonna be back in the fold in July. The problem is winter tour is basically when you have a response to how you launched in the fall, which is the big time. I mean, we were getting to a 52-week schedule, but you know, for whatever reason, fall is still the time. People are going back to school. It's getting darker earlier. More people watch TV. And so when we get into January, we're about to head into midseason. So there's a fall evaluation period that would have been nice for those executives to be there to talk about it. And again, you don't have to, if you go in with the assumption that, oh, we're going to bring them out because we have nothing but failure to talk about, then you don't know how to run a session. You don't know how to prep your people to put spin on, legible spin, not like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about, but like you can say, hey, you know, this show really tanked. Why did you guys make that? Maybe that's a question. And the answer would be, you know what? You're right. It didn't do well. We believed in this showrunner and we thought that show was stick. We were wrong, but we're going to keep trying. That's all you have to say. How effing hard is that? And then take the stuff that is doing well year to year or in the time slot or has diversity or things that you can sell and promote that stuff. I don't know. It's so simple to me that and anybody turning down an opportunity to control the narrative is crazy.
All right. Well, we'll see if the others come back for the following Fox's lead or whether we'll be talking about this summer.
I know, right?
Who knows? Anyway, and look for a reaction from the mass scheduler. There always is one when we mention him because he listens. Hi.
I'm sure he loved that part.
I'm sure he did. I can feel it. It's like, can he break
he
in?
Needs to take he needs to take the mask off because it's blinding him.
Oh.
He can't see out of it.
Oh.
One of the eye holes must be covered. He can't see the big picture.
No, but he's going to give you a Lucha Libre metaphor and say that he's going to be, you know, giving you the smackdown. So, in fact, I believe that's the name of his piece is the TCA smackdown. So, you know, got to be on brand. Wrestling references, got to do it. A couple other news notes I wanted to mention before we talk about the one review that I've got from you this week. Just little stuff, if people care. I noticed it all, so I wanted to mention it. I guess in an interview with Newsweek, it was picked up by many places, including The Hollywood Reporter. Brian Fuller announced that he's not involved at all with the new Star Trek show, which makes me really sad. Although I have a theory, which is that he's a giant Star Trek nerd who, when they came to him and said, we would like you to do this, he said yes. And then he realized, oh God, I'm executive producing three different series, including a major new launch on HBO, and I can't do this. And it sounds like he asked for, you know, he brought in help and he asked for a delay. And then at some point, CBS was like, dude, you can't do this. You're never going to be able to do all this work. And that he kind of backed away. But it seemed really sad and wistful. Like he wrote the pilot in the first couple of episodes and did the entire season long story arc. And now he's basically and put in his people who are, I think, the showrunners now. But he basically is not involved and is not even seeing what they're doing, which is just, it just seems sort of sad that he's not able to keep his hand in some way. But it sounds like he and CBS just couldn't, like, I don't know. I feel bad for him. And yet I also would not be shocked if this was really CBS saying, look, we have to launch this show and you don't have the time to do it. But either way, I don't know. I guess we have to file that new Star Trek show under troubled production now.
I'm sure somebody will definitely do that and put it in their show. And we'll see. We'll see how it works. I mean, they definitely have a right to say, we really wanted you to there more. But at the same time, you look who you're dealing with. You're dealing with one of the more talented people and everybody wants a shot at this guy.
Yeah.
So he's pulled in different directions. And it's also, you can't blame him for being sort of like, I've got a lot of babies to nurse.
Yeah,
so.
And maybe it's one of those things where it's like he can't, I don't know. I mean, there are producers who produce lots of shows, but I think maybe he is a very hands-on kind of person and there was no way he was going to, I don't know what's going on with the production of American Gods, but you know, on one level, first off, you've got a high profile, show launch with American Gods and he's probably deep in the weeds of that, and then this thing on top of it that he couldn't say no to but maybe should have said no to. Mm-hmm. I don't know. He'll have a stamp on it. I'm just a little sad that he's not involved on a very high level of, and the way he, it was a sort of a wistful end to the interview where he said, if they come back for a second season, they know how to they have my number. I'm like, oh no, that's terrible. Like they could call me, but they're not going to call him. That's anyway. Yeah. No, so
I saw that they have my number quoted. That's always tough. Hard to read what that means. It's like, well, if they need me, they can find me. And also like they got my number. Like it's, you can read a lot into that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough one. Yeah, that's tough because I don't know. My read on it is that he was never going to say no to Star Trek, even though he probably should have because he's such a fan. And you know, his legacy may be if it gets off and is a success, then that'll be it. Is that he got it off the ground and came up with the concept and all that. But it's tough because he's somebody who cares about the source material and has a vision and knows how to put together a show. And you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
We'll see. I mean, because if he has his people in charge, then that might help. So.
Yeah, there's a pair of their co-showrunners who've collaborated for a long time, and they work with him on Wonderfalls, I think, and they've been on a bunch of other shows, and they're the showrunners basically. So we'll see. The other notes I wanted to get out really quick. Grant Tinker died, who was
legend.
Yeah, legend at NBC, especially. Mm-hmm. There was back to the Masked Scheduler for a second. I think he quoted Grant Tinker after Grant Tinker passed away, as saying that the something like the quality comes first, and then the viewers come second. That like he had this vision of how to build the network. He sort of like laid the groundwork for then the Brandon Tartikoff era at NBC, and this is like the Hill Street Blues. Mm-hmm. He created Hill Street Blues, right? Isn't that right?
Well, it's certainly part of it.
It was because he was at MTM, Mary Tyler Moore's production mm-hmm. company, and then he became the CEO of NBC. It's just like a legendary career, and with a lot of quality too.
Yeah, a lot of quality, and you know, again, different era. They were the only show in town, but totally amazing legacy. And yeah, I didn't. It was before my time covering the press tour. Well before my time.
And I misstated it. This is because Hollywood Reporter appreciation for him was written by Stephen Bochco, who was the creator of Hill Street Blues. And it's that Tinker Tartikoff era. Hill Street Blues was the example of like the show that's legendary, and they had to mm-hmm. they sort of stuck with it. And Bochco is saying that he talked about how he envied Tinker's job, and he's like, "Are you crazy? Why would you run a network if you can write?" Like yeah. It was just an amazing little.
Yeah, that's right. And even back then, right? Why would you run a network?
It's yeah.
Like, those were, do the fun stuff.
Yeah. So that was, anyway,
no
that was
fun in those jobs.
I wanted to note that one. I also had a wacky story that I wanted to share. I don't always bring in some headlines, but this week there's a bunch of stuff going on. It's been 2 weeks, right? The Full House in San Francisco. So it's a local story for us. 1709 Broderick. And the people who've lived there famously over the years, as far as I can tell, have hated the fact that it's the Full House, because people come and they want to take their pictures with it and all of that. Well, it went on the market in May, and it has been bought by the creator of Full House. So we've come all the way back around. He wants to restore it and put the door on it from the original show, and maybe even make it like on the inside look just like it does on the show. And I have no love for Full House or Fuller House or anything like that, but I am really amused by the fact that the guy who created Full House is now the guy who owns the Full House. That's just great.
Yes, and buying any property in San Francisco, we know that he's done quite well for himself.
Yeah, he paid about $4 million, $4 million for that house.
Wow.
The Tanner family got it early, and they I think they got the Prop 13 tax lock-in, so that mm-hmm. they can afford to live there. And since the 80s. But anyway, I'll put that link in the show notes too from the Hollywood Reporter. It's just a funny story that they. What he said is, no one has allowed us to shoot in that house since we did our very first stock shoot back in April of 87. Our audience has watched the same cars drive by that house for 29 years. It's going to be really nice to see some new cars drive by. So, wow. It made me laugh.
Yeah, that was a crazy story.
I have no comment about the Gilmore Girls Netflix thing. Other than that, I watched that show and I liked it, and then at some point I stopped watching it, and I kind of feel like I will get to the Gilmore Girls specials sometime, but people have been talking about it, so I think it's another data point for us when we talk about these, you know, revival reunion things that are that keep happening now, where networks are bringing back old shows. Speaking of Fuller House, but also like the X-Files and 24 and things like that.
Right. That, and your response to that is, you know, my for Gilmore Girls. That's exactly my feeling. I loved it when it was on. Then I kind of faded away from it. I don't feel a need to go revisit it, but you know, I probably will in time. I'm not part of that crazy, you know, oh, it's super hyped. I don't really like when shows come back. So,
right. Well, that's the thing.
I'll get to it if I need to.
They're generally disappointing when they do return. And, with Gilmore Girls, it's that thing like the X-Files actually, where you have that moment where you're like, oh great, I loved that show. And then you think about it and you realize, well, I did love that show. And then at some point during the run, I didn't love it anymore. And I stopped watching it. And so now a lot of these shows come back and you're like, what happened in the last 2 years that I didn't watch? Cause I don't like, as far as I know, Rory's still in, you know, at the, her little academy with her friend Paris, frenemy Paris, sorry, she's a friend, frenemy. The original frenemy. Mm-hmm. And you know, Luke and Lorelai, and there's, she's got boyfriends, there's the you know, Jess and Dean and whatever. I don't know. I feel like I really only remember the first 2 or 3 years of Gilmore Girls. So I do not have the stamina for a rewatch of Gilmore Girls.
No. Right? And again, there's way, way more shows that I'm interested in, new shows that I want to see first.
Yeah. As fond as I was of that show, and any excuse to go back and watch Gilmore Girls era Lauren Graham, I'm happy to do, because she's great. She's great. But that she was my TV girlfriend when that show was on. She was so, you know, I could go back. Maybe I'll go back. I'm starting a rewatch, Tim, right now. Here we go. Anyway, Gilmore Girls, it's on the list, but boy, there's just so much. It's tough to revisit old shows when there's so much new. The last news bit I had was a show that you reviewed positively, Good Girls Revolt, it will not be picked up by Amazon, which is interesting, although it sounds like even though it was watched fairly well, according to independent media monitors, it sounds like basically the people in charge at Amazon didn't like it, and so they just didn't want to bother, and now the producer, Sony TV, is going to like shop it around.
Yeah, it's I really feel dubious about the there were some quotes in those original stories about how they came up with the numbers. I am not a believer. I think it's very sketchy.
Not a believer in the Symphony Advanced Media independent streaming numbers.
It's very sketchy. And I wouldn't trust those for anything. So I, you know, sure, she can say we get more. And one of the things she said was, well, we have more viewers than, what was the show?
She's twice as many viewers as Transparent.
Right, which is
although one of the things in this story that I thought was interesting is when they talked about Amazon's perception, it was like they didn't really like it. The executives didn't, which is a tough one, and didn't think it was awards bait.
It is definitely not awards bait. And my review was very like meh. I mean, it would have been a better show if it was less involved in the '60s. The '60s was what was, but it's based on the book. And that's their business model, right? They basically make it, they let you shoot the whole season and they put it on. So you could say the executives didn't really know what they were getting until later, or, and they saw the pilot and they thought, okay, we can get something out of this. But, that's also their, well, just to backtrack to what, Dana Calvo, who created it, said, it's like, maybe you did get more viewers. But that's not the business they're in. They're not in the ratings business.
Well, and the award bait is an example, right? It was like, maybe you did have, it's entirely possible they had twice the audience of Transparent, but perhaps the reason Amazon has Transparent on is because everybody talks about it and it's in the Emmys every year and the Golden Globes every year. And it's a part of the conversation, and that's good for Amazon, even if people end up not watching it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. The reason that that's how all of these shows, HBO, Starz, everybody, you have to want it. You have to hear it in the zeitgeist and say, what? Transparent. Everybody's talking about that. And they're at the award shows and like my coworkers think it's the best show ever. And I'll have all these thoughtful stories about it that I'm reading. Then you want to get Amazon. That's the whole point. Or you want to get HBO. It's not because they don't care how many people watches it. They just want you to do it. And awards bait is what drives subscription services. So yeah, that's the point.
Yeah.
So if she wants to, you know, if Sony or whoever wants to put that onto a network, go for it. I mean, it's fine. There was no reason other than the nudity that they had on there. There was no reason that it couldn't have been on a network show. I think there's a story there. I just didn't, in the actual series. But in my review, I said, I wish it wasn't so hyped and connected to the 60s. Mm.
Okay, one review this week. It's Incorporated, which you talk about this. I'm a sci-fi guy.
Yes.
I had never even heard of this and didn't know it existed. So tell me about it. What is it?
See, yeah, so that, that is why.
Right?
Right, exactly. And, you know, so even though people were tweeting about Incorporated or apparently haven't written a bunch of advanced stories about it, though, that you didn't hear about it, but you hear about plenty of other ones. So this is the world we live in. You got to take a shot anytime you can get your hope to be heard. I liked it. I think that if your results will vary because you're into it more. I thought it was a really nice diversion from as much as I love West Wing. You know, there's been some stories about how West Wing, you can become too involved in the mystery and not really pay attention to the show. I'm not so hooked into like what's going on with Incorporated as I am the fact that I just like, oh, that's kind of cool, or that didn't work, but it was pretty entertaining. So basically it's they have a pretty good cast, and the premise is it's 2047 and there's been a climate based catastrophe around the world, and governments can't keep up and have imploded, and multinational corporations are now running everything. And basically there's a green zone, which is if you work for, you know, imagine like Google, but it's like some other place. It's called SPIGA. You work for SPIGA and you have all this cool high tech. And if you work for them and you pledge your fealty to them, then you get real food. You have a good car. You live in a nice house. If you are not there, you're in the red zone, which is basically dystopian ghettos. And, you know, the hook of the series is somebody who came from one of the red zone is now working inside SPIGA, and they're going to try to take it down from the inside or whatever. But I thought there was plenty of stuff in it that was really interesting. There's definitely some not a thing technology moments in it.
Ooh.
But it's also 2047. So like, we're just going to pretend it's a thing. There were parts of it that I thought like, I'm not with that. But then there are other parts where I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. That's a good idea. In fact, one of the weirdest ones was like, when they show these shots of this red zone or this dystopian torn down people are starving. They're eating synthetic food, et cetera. This is really little. There's some Blade Runner elements to it. There's a lot of homages, whether they were intentional or not, in there from sci-fi shows. But one of the guys comes out of the green zone, our hero or whoever, and he goes in and he needs to talk to somebody in like the 18th floor of this completely half devastated building. And, you know, nothing works. There's no electricity. And you just to get in the building, you've got to you can be killed. He gets in the building and he basically there's a service where you give a guy a couple of bucks and he straps you on the back of his dirt bike motorcycle and goes up 18 flights of stairs. And I thought, OK, that is ridiculous, but I loved it because they have the camera mounted and, you know, some stunt guys driving that thing up with a guy in the back straight up these eight and turning the tight stairwell corners. And they show like three floors of it pretty loud. And I was like, OK, I like that.
All right.
So it's a good fold the clothes, eat your dinner diversion.
All right. I will. I'll check it out.
Mm-hmm.
I just added it to my TiVo. How about that?
There you go.
Want to do some letters?
Let's do that.
Okay, so Dean of the 707, soon back in the 707, we have his travel update. He's been traveling the country and looking at shows in various states. He says he watched Longmire back in Wyoming.
Uh-huh, good show.
And watched 1858's Buckskin on YouTube while in Montana.
Wow.
Okay, hard to find Montana shows, I guess. Anyway, Dean, by the way, Dean will be back in the Bay Area soon, presumably in time for our meetup, which is still slated for December 19th. Tim, that's 17 days away now. Where are we going? Do we know?
I thought it was the 18th. And
oh, no.
I might have a conflict.
Oh, no.
If it's the 19th, I might not have a conflict.
I have the 19th down. Monday, the 19th.
Oh, okay. I think I had Monday as the 18th. All right. I was looking some... I have to... Well, we'll table this discussion.
We're in bed.
We'll
we're in bed.
Figure shape. It out.
Okay, we're going to figure it out, though, because, you know, there will be... We will be somewhere on the 19th. Find us. Come find us.
Somewhere.
We'll be somewhere. I even if I have to just go into downtown San Francisco and stand at the 21st Amendment.
Right.
I will do that if it comes to that on the 19th. So, you know people. You know people. You can find
we'll
some
figure,
place for
we'll
us.
Figure something else. Yeah. Right. My mind has not been on this.
I know. Understood.
I should probably put it on that.
Well, we'll work it out. But anyway, we're counting down. We're a couple weeks away now from exciting meetup business in the Bay Area. Pencil it in. 19th evening, San Francisco, probably somewhere. Probably. Okay. Speaking of meeting up, somebody we met up with many years ago at one of these, George D. from the 415.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
OG.
He's an OG.
He sent this in, you know, many weeks ago, but I just loved it and it tickled me. He said, there's some fantastic Bill Walton happening on ESPN2 right now. And it's like, I always appreciate the Bill Walton alerts. I especially like it when there's a Bill Walton appearance at a Giants game, because it's like Grateful Dead night or something. Those are all
oh,
pretty
yeah.
good. But, but you know, when he does basketball, you get your throw it down, big man, that kind of thing. So that's always good.
Walton's one of a kind.
He is. Okay, so Steph from the +41 says, my pick for the best TV program airing at the moment is BBC's Planet Earth 2. The footage is incredible, great cinematography, Sir Attenborough narrating, Hans Zimmer musing, it's dreamlike. Now that's drama. I have not seen this other than that clip that everybody has seen where those snakes try to kill that lizard. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that.
Oh, man. That's the best. It's mind-blowing.
Wow.
I don't know how they did it, but, like, yeah, it's seriously the snakes trying to kill the lizard. It's
well, Planet
incredible.
Earth was fantastic in the first go-around. It was one of the best things it's ever been on. So, yeah, that's an easy endorsement.
Yeah.
I have not seen 2.
Planet Earth 2.
Planet Earth 2. This time it's personal.
Is that airing? Is that airing in the U.S. yet?
I think it's not, but then again, maybe, you know, it is peak TV. It could have slipped under the radar because it's not scripted, so it could have, but I don't think so.
Aired in the United States each Saturday beginning January 28th on BBC America. So
woo,
listen to the words overseas and get ready next month for Planet Earth 2, especially Iguana versus Snakes. Because, oh my
I'm
God.
I'm going to look that up.
I'll put that,
go to the site.
I'll put that in the show notes too. It's amazing.
Iguana versus snakes.
Seriously, it's so cinematic and terrifying. The snakes are, it's great. It really is brilliant. It's like a Mad Max kind of thing, except with snakes. Alan, okay, it's Nemesis time, actually. We're going to proceed this. We're entering the Nemesis portion of the show where my Alan and Alan from
the
Facebook Allens. Are coming at me. So Alan, with two A's in the 660, writes in, I enjoyed the last show, including the political TV speculation, but then the show ended and I was reminded for yet another week I was unable to come up with anything to grumble at Jason about, which sucks because the Nemesis thing is a funny bit. I felt like I wasn't holding up my end, but then I thought about it some more and I realized Jason wasn't giving me anything to work with. That's right, Jason, I'm calling you out. It's all your fault. And Alan also linked us to the your roundtable discussion of The Americans. He says a really worthwhile watch for anyone who digs that show, which should be everyone who listens to this podcast. I'll put that link in the show notes because your thing in New York about The Americans is now on YouTube.
Yeah, that's totally watchable. It was a good time, and I think I tweeted out a link. I can do another one where I did my, the Vancouver International Film Festival finally put out my interview.
Oh, your Tatiana Maslany interview. Mm-hmm. I saw that too.
Yeah. I've been busy.
You were all over it.
I was around.
Mm-hmm. You were completely all over it. Now, where is the, they just posted it on, it's on Vimeo. I see.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, I'll put that in the show notes too. Look at you,
look at
fancy
that.
Man with all your star interviews and stuff.
Going places,
I
talking
know.
To people
doing, yeah,
in geez. Person.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing about our meetup is you don't have to go anywhere. You just have to be at a location But you don't have to fly or anything.
I don't have to fly to New York or Vancouver.
No,
so go
you
to
just
San
have to show, to show up at a bar. I think that would
and
probably
drink.
Do it. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I could do that.
Okay, what else? Dirk, who did not leave an area code, but he was Facebook, said, I just watched MacGyver episode 5, and it is an entire episode of Not a Thing. It took place on a German train, but the creators obviously never saw a German train, or any other modern train, for that matter. Totally ridiculous, and the funny part was that they showed stock footage of the train station in the same episode with real trains, and you could easily see that the fake one looked nothing like them. They never really tried to get anything right.
Welcome to television. Yeah.
Thanks, MacGyver. And right. Thanks, Dirk. And wow. Finally, from Mike in the 908, he says, sound breaking was everything you promised. I'm amazed how they managed to jump around so much, and yet the episodes felt so well structured. I cannot agree more. That is a sign of really good documentary filmmaking to be able to do that. That was like Ken Burns level of segues and transitions and stuff.
It was
like,
amazing.
Yeah.
I believe that one is going to rate very highly on my end of the year.
End of year list. Yeah. Oh, it's December now. We will be talking about that in a very soon in a future episode. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Mike in the 908 asks, what are some of your other favorite rock documentaries?
Oh, let's see.
You can drop The Last Waltz. That's an easy one, right?
That's an easy one.
This is Spinal Tap. I'm going to throw that in there.
That's a whole other genre.
I don't know what you're talking about. That's a rock documentary.
Okay, you're right. Rock documentary. well, one of my personal favorites is I Am Trying to Break Your Heart, the documentary on Wilco.
Right.
That was really good. There's a documentary. Let me see here. God, there's the punch, and I'm kind of spacing them.
I kind of like Michael Apted's Bring on the Night, the Sting documentary, which is him.
I actually have not seen that.
That is Sting deciding to make an album without the police. And it's like literally recorded in whatever, 1985, when he decided to do that. And it's kind of, the music is good. That's the early, you know, it's that first Sting solo album. And I kind of, and his partner has a baby in it. Like in the movie, she has their baby. It's wacky.
Wow.
Okay, I watched that a lot in high school.
One. I have actually, there's a great Big Star documentary, which is now escaping my name. I'm clearly at a loss, but it's funny. I'm gonna actually,
is that Nothing Can Hurt Me?
Yes, and I'm gonna take this question because this is a good question, and it's caught me at a bad brain dead moment. I'm gonna revisit it because I love that idea. I've been starting to collect these. So you think I would actually remember what I'm collecting? But I'm starting to collect these because I'm doing so much music writing on the side, and I will revisit that, and I'll have a much better answer. How about that?
All right, that's good. I think there are lots out there, but it would be great for somebody like you who spends a lot of time thinking about music stuff to do that. That would be
cool. I will do that.
All right, this is Spinal Tap.
I feel bad that I've let you down, but you can start with "I Am Trying to Break Your Heart," one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's great. What about Anvil? Anvil, the story of Anvil. In the Spinal Tap vein, the loudest. I had to laugh, actually, when they're talking in episode 4 or 5 of Soundbreaking, they're talking to The Who. And they talk about how, like, they met the guy at Marshall who was building all the amps.
That's a great part.
And then somebody actually says The Who got a reputation as the world's loudest rock band. I thought that's actually one of my favorite jokes from This is Spinal Tap, is that they're introduced with all these superlatives, but it turns out that nobody is saying that they're good, just that they're loud.
Right.
They earned a reputation as the world's loudest rock band.
Yeah.
Well, great. Oh, Stop Making Sense might be on that list too.
Yes, very good. See,
that's a good one too. But you'll come back to it. That's a good. That's a good topic.
Come back and,
it's a little
and
story
say, oh,
idea, a little story scene.
It is. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's it. I should read the numbers. So you can email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. You can tweet at us @TVTM. I'm Jay Snell on Twitter, and Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. And you can, what else can you do? You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine, and post there. And of course, all the show notes, there are going to be a lot of links today. They are in your podcast player, probably, if you scroll around or tap or something while you're listening to this episode, it'll probably be in there. But failing you can also go to theuncomparable.com/TVTM/108 and get them all. And we'll be back next week. Maybe we'll talk about some list making next week, Tim. What do you think?
I think so, because I am in dangerously hectic catch-up mode, as I said to my boss.
Yeah, because you got to do the stuff that you missed that you've been saying, like, okay, that got good reviews, but I didn't have to review it. That's the stuff you got to revisit now so that you can make your lists and have them.
Yeah,
be
that, and then like, oh my god, I really loved the show that I didn't finish.
There's three episodes left.
Right.
You watch the first five on screeners, and then it turns out there's five more. And what do you do?
Exactly. I got to get on that right. And get that done.
Well, list making is an important part of our society and economy.
It is. So. It's so much fun. It's a great diversion from thinking about the real world.
Yeah, I agree. More or less. Let's hear about it. Okay. Send us your feedback. Send us your letters. We'll be back next week with another TV Talk Machine. But until then, goodbye, everybody. Tim, have a good weekend. See you next week.
All right. You too.